A time of extraordinaries. Eyewitnesses to New Madrid.
One of the strongest earthquake series ever reported in the United States occurred on December 16, 1811, January 23rd, and February 7th, 1812, with more than 1,000 aftershocks occurring over the next several years. It is estimated that the quakes extended over more than 1 million square miles, with reports of the earth shaking from as far north as Pennsylvania, as far south as Arkansas, and as far east as South Carolina.
The United States public was awed by the New Madrid events, and newspapers and journals filled with eyewitness accounts, essays, and sermons about what appeared to be the end of the world. Here, in the words of survivors, commentators, and poets, is the story of the great New Madrid quakes.
On the night of the 20th of November, 1811, I saw three large, extraordinary fires in the air. One appeared in an easterly direction, one in the north, and one in the south. Their continuance was several hours. Their size, as large as a house on fire. The motion of the blaze, quite visible, but no sparks appeared. Another phenomenon appeared on the 22nd of November, of which I was a spectator. About 2 o'clock p.m., a meteor took fire in the air, attended with a fulminating noise, and bore a southeast direction. And however unaccountable, it is a fact that about the same instant, a whitish substance, resembling a duck in size and shape, detached itself and descended with a swift motion from the cloud of smoke that was formed and was beheld at my house and 15 miles due north of it and 23 miles west of it at the same instant. Whether these things are ominous or not, one thing is certain. This is a time of extraordinaries. Samuel L. Mitchell, U.S. House of Representatives, 1815.
Dear sir, in compliance with your request, I will now give you a history, as full in detail as the limits of the letter will permit, of the late awful visitation of Providence in this place and vicinity. On the 16th of December, 1811, about 2 o'clock a.m., we were visited by a violent shock of an earthquake, accompanied by a very awful noise, resembling loud but distant thunder, but more hoarse and vibrating, which was followed in a few minutes by the complete saturation of the atmosphere with sulfurous vapor, causing total darkness. The screams of the affrighted inhabitants running to and fro, not knowing where to go or what to do. The cries of the fowls and beasts of every species. The cracking of trees falling and the roaring of the Mississippi, the current of which was retrograde for a few minutes, owing, as is supposed, to an eruption in its bed, formed a scene truly horrible. Eliza Bryan, letter to Evangelist Lorenzo Dow, 1816.
Transaction of the Literary and Philosophical Society of New York.
A detailed narrative of the earthquakes which occurred on the 16th day of December, 1811, and agitated the parts of North America that lie between the Atlantic Ocean and Louisiana.
And also a particular account of other quakings of the earth occasionally felt from that time to the 23rd and 30th of January, the 7th and 16th of February, 1812, and subsequently the 18th of December, 1813.
And which shook the country from Detroit and the lakes to New Orleans and the Gulf of Mexico.
Compiled chiefly at Washington in the District of Columbia, we would assume from the safest distance.
In Richmond at 3 o'clock on the 16th of December, there were said to be three successive shocks. Several people were impressed with a belief that thieves had entered their dwellings. And in one of the most elevated mansions, the bells were set a-ringing in both the upper and lower rooms. The noise and concussion were supposed by some to proceed from east to west. But considerable as these operations were, they were surpassed by others which took place along the river Mississippi. Indeed, the strata underlying the bed of this stream appear to have been the principal seat of the commotion.
The phenomena were described in the most fearful and alarming strains by several writers. Much exaggeration was interwoven with some of the narratives.
Some, indeed, were tinctured with fable and burlesque. Among the various recitals, it became exceedingly difficult to find out the true or even the most probable account.
The sulfurated gases that were discharged during the shocks tainted the air with their noxious effluvia and so strongly impregnated the water of the river to the distance of 150 miles below that it could hardly be used for any purpose for a number of days. New Madrid, which stood on a bluff 15 or 20 feet above the summer floods, sunk so low that the next rise covered it to the depth of 5 feet. The bottoms of several lakes in the vicinity were elevated so as to become dry land and have since been planted with corn.
There was a great shaking of the earth this morning. Tables and chairs turned and knocked over all around, all of us knocked out of our bed. The roar I thought would have left us deaf if we lived. It was not a storm. When you could hear, all you could hear were the screams of people, from people and animals. It was the worst thing I ever witnessed. It was still dark, and you could not see nothing. I thought the shaking and the loud roaring would never stop.
You could not hold on to nothing. Neither man nor woman was strong enough. Shaking would knock you loose like knocking hickory nuts out of a tree. I don't know how we lived through it. None of us was killed. We was all banged up, and some of us knocked out for a while, and blood was everywhere. When it got daybreak, you could see the damage done all around. We still had our home, though it was some damaged. Some people did not. We will have to hunt our animals. Everybody is scared to death. We still do not know if anybody was killed. I made my mind to one thing. If this earthquake or whatever it was did not happen in the territory of Indiana, then me and my family is moving to Pigeon Roost as soon as I can get things together. George Heinrich Christ, 16 December 1811, Nelson County, Kentucky.
Dr. S.P. Hildreth of Ohio, medical doctor and geologist, gathered data and wrote in detail of the quake at a time when extraordinaries were the rule and facts were in short supply.
The center of its violence was thought to be near the Little Prairie, 25 or 30 miles below New Madrid, the vibrations from which were felt all over the valley of the Ohio, as high up as Pittsburgh. The first shock was felt on the 16th of December, 1811, and was repeated at intervals with decreasing violence until the month of February.
New Madrid, having suffered more than any other town on the Mississippi from its effects, was considered as situated near the focus from whence the undulation proceeded. From an eyewitness who was then about 40 miles below that town in a flatboat on his way to New Orleans with a load of produce, the agitation filled every living creature with terror. The first shock took place in the night while the boat was lying at the shore in company with several others. At this period, there was danger apprehended from the southern Indians, it being soon after the Battle of Tippecanoe. And for safety, several boats kept in company for mutual defense in case of an attack.
7 Indians are said to have been swallowed up in one of those apertures in the earth, one of whom only made his escape, who states that this calamity was foretold by the Shawnee prophet for the destruction of the whites.
In the middle of the night, there was a terrible shock and jarring of the boats, so that crews were all awakened and hurried on deck with their weapons of defense in their hands, thinking that the Indians were rushing on board. The ducks, geese, and other aquatic birds, whose numberless flocks were quietly resting in the eddies of the river, were thrown into the greatest tumult, and with loud screams expressed their alarm in accents of terror.
As soon as it was light enough to distinguish objects, the crews were all up, making ready to depart. Directly, loud roaring and hissing was heard, like the escape of steam from a boiler, accompanied by the most violent agitation of the shores and tremendous boiling up of the waters of the Mississippi in huge swells.
The water of the river, which the day before was tolerably clear, being rather low, changed to a reddish hue and became thick with mud thrown up from its bottom, while the surface, lashed violently by the agitation of the earth beneath, was covered with foam, which, gathering into masses the size of a barrel, floated along on the trembling surface.
The earth opened in wide fissures and, closing again, threw the water, sand, and mud in large jets higher than the tops of the trees. The atmosphere was filled with a thick vapor or gas, to which the light imparted a purple tinge, altogether different in appearance from the autumnal haze of the Indian summer or that of smoke.
In New Madrid, there was a tremendous noise, rousing a family from their sleep, rocking the house, throwing down the chimney, and terrifying them so that they passed the remainder of the morning from 2 o'clock, when the shock was felt, in the open air. During the time of the shock, the heavens were very clear and serene. There being not a breath of air stirring, but in 5 minutes it became very dark, and the vapor, which seemed to impregnate the atmosphere, had a disagreeable smell and produced a difficulty of breathing. This darkness continued until nearly the break of day and was accompanied by loud noises and the bounding motion up and down. Many persons were so alarmed that they formed encampments in the fields. There were shocks repeated from time to time until the 28th, and they amounted to 67.
Ponds had been converted to upland and dry land to lakes. The banks of the river had sunk and fallen in to great extent. Cracks had been formed in the earth. Water had gushed out, and there was a strange and chaotic mixture of the elements. In some places, sand, mud, water, and stone coal were reported to have been thrown up 30 yards high.
December 19th, to the editors of the Raleigh Star, Asheville, North Carolina.
Gentlemen, I take the liberty to transmit the following account of an earthquake, which happened on the night between the 15th and 16th instant. For several nights previous, the aurora borealis brilliantly illuminated the sky with its trembling coruscations. The late appearance of a splendid comet and the blood-like color of the sun for several days had alarmed a great many superstitious people. They talked of war, and when the news of Governor Harrison's dear-bought victory arrived, it brought to their recollection all those appearances which are still believed, as these are now, to have been the awful procurers of that bloody war by which we gained our independence.
A wonderful change has taken place in the manners of the people. I believe so many fervent prayers never were put up in this place as on that fearful night and morning. I hope what has been done may produce a revival in religion.
The river rose in a few minutes 5 or 6 feet, and impatient of the restraint, again rushed forward with redoubled impetuosity. Hurrying along the boats now set loose by the horror-struck boatmen, as in less danger on the water than at the shore, where the banks threatened every moment to destroy them by falling earth or carrying them down in the vortex of the sinking masses.
Several boats were carried by into a small stream that puts into the river just above the town and left on the ground by the returning water, a considerable distance from the river.
A man who belonged to one of the company boats was left for several hours on the upright trunk of an old snag in the middle of the river, against which his boat was wrecked and sunk. It stood with the roots a few feet above the water, and to these he contrived to attach himself, while every fresh shock threw the agitated waves against and kept gradually settling the tree deeper in the mud at the bottom, bringing him nearer and nearer to the deep, muddy waters, which to his terrified imagination seemed desirous of swallowing him up. While hanging here, calling with piteous shouts for aid, several boats passed by without being able to relieve him, until finally a skiff was well manned, rowed a short distance above him, and dropped down close to the snag from which he tumbled in as she passed by.
The Evangelical Record and Western Review, January 1st, 1812.
Our readers not need be informed that repeated shocks of earthquakes, and some of them pretty alarming, have, during the winter, been generally felt through the Western country. It shall be our duty, as editors of a religious work, to direct the attention of our readers to their moral use. In a moral view, there are three ways in which men are affected by earthquakes. Many are no otherwise affected than the brutes are. They are panic-struck at the time. Trembling seizes them, and their hair of their flesh stands up. But their rational faculty is never excised. No sooner is the danger supposed to be over than all about it is forgotten.
There are others of our race who behold these great works of God with a considerable degree of attention. But they carry their inquiries no farther than the natural causes which are supposed to have produced them. The hand of God is never acknowledged. It is electricity, or vapor, or this or that which has produced the convulsion. These are devils in employing their intellectual faculty wholly in contriving how the world was made and is governed without a God. But there is a third class. They recognize the direct agency of Jehovah in these convulsions, and they consider them as intimately connected with the moral government of the world. In their creed, what are called the laws of matter are not causes, but effects. All thunderstorm, rain, mountains shaking is the direct agency of Jehovah. Reader, is this all-powerful Jehovah your friend or your enemy?
February 12th, 1812. The Lexington Statesman.
67 shocks have been witnessed in all, which have split and cracked the earth in 100 places in the neighborhood. During the violent shocks, the people, by their yells and shrieks, discovered their extreme alarm. And upon one of these occasions, a lady was known to faint and never recover.
On the 7th of last February, at 3 a.m., being moored to the bank of the Mississippi, about 13 miles above New Madrid, a boatman was awakened by a tremendous roaring noise, felt his vessel violently shaken, and observed the trees over the bank falling in every direction, and agitated like reeds on a windy day, and many sparks of fire emitted from the earth. He immediately cut his cable and put off into the middle of the river, where he soon found the current changed, and the boat hurried up for a space of about a minute. With its velocity of the swiftest horse, he was obliged to hold his hand to his head to keep his hat on. On the currents running through its natural course, which it did gradually, he continued to proceed downriver, and at about daylight he came to the most terrific fall, which he thinks was at least 6 feet perpendicular, extending across the river and about half a mile wide.
The whirls and ripplings of this rapid were such that the vessel was altogether unmanageable, and destruction seemed inevitable. Some of the former, he thinks, were at least 30 feet deep, and seemed to be formed by the waters being violently sucked into some chasm in the river's bottom. He and his men were constantly employed in pumping and bailing, by which, through the aid of Providence, he says, he got safe through. As soon as he was able to look round, he observed whole forests on each bank fall prostrate, to use his own comparison, like soldiers grounding their arms at the word of command. On his arrival at New Madrid, he found that place a complete wreck, sunk about 12 feet below its level and entirely deserted. Its inhabitants, with those of the adjacent country, who had fled there for refuge, were encamped in its neighborhood. He represents their cries as truly distressing.
The 30 miles flight.
Colonel John Shaw of Marquette County, Wisconsin, was visiting near New Madrid the winter of the earthquake. He said that on February 7, 1812, he felt the most severe shock. Nearly 2,000 people fled their houses. They went to Taiwapiti Hill, 30 miles north, 7 miles back from the river.
This was the first high ground above New Madrid, and here the fugitives formed an encampment. It was proposed that all should kneel and engage in supplicating God's mercy, and all simultaneously, Catholics and Protestants, knelt and offered solemn prayer to their Creator. About 12 miles back toward New Madrid, a young woman about 17 years of age named Betsy Masters had been left by her parents and family, her right leg having been broken below the knee by the falling of one of the weight poles of the roof of the cabin. And though a total stranger, I was the only person who would consent to return and see whether she still survived. Receiving a description of the locality of the place, I started and found the poor girl upon a bed as she had been left, with some water and cornbread within her reach. I cooked up some food for her and made her condition as comfortable as circumstances would allow, and returned the same day to the grand encampment. Miss Masters eventually recovered.
In abandoning their homes on this emergency, the people stopped only long enough to get their teams and hurry their families and some provisions. It was a matter of doubt among them whether water or fire would be most likely to burst forth and cover all the country. This hegira, with all its attendant appalling circumstances, was the most heartening scene, had the effect to constrain the most wicked and profane earnestly to plead to God in prayer for mercy. In less than 3 months, most of the people returned to their homes. And though the earthquakes continued occasionally with less destructive effects, they became so accustomed to the recurring vibrations that they paid little or no regard to them, not even interrupting or checking their dances, frolics, and vice.
What are we going to do? You cannot fight it because you do not know how. It is not something that you can see. In a storm, you can see the sky and it shows dark clouds and you know that you might get strong winds, but this, you cannot see anything but a house that just lays there in a pile on the ground, not scattered around in trees that just falls over with the roots still on it. The earthquake or whatever it is come again today. It was as bad or worse than the one in December. We lost our Amanda Jane in this one. A log fell on her. We will bury her upon the hill under a clump of trees where Betsy's ma and pa is buried. A lot of people think that the devil has come here. Some thinks that this is the beginning of the world coming to an end. George Heinrich Christ, January 1812.
In 1819, 8 years after the earthquake, the new Madrid district still presented the appearance of decay. Large and beautiful orchards left unenclosed, houses uninhabited, deep chasms in the earth, obvious at frequent intervals. Such was the face of the country, although the people had for years become accustomed to frequent and small shocks, which did no essential injury.
Professor W. J. McGee, who was one of the division chiefs at the St. Louis World's Fair and a scientist of wide repute, made a study of earthquakes. He held to the theory that the New Madrid earthquake will repeat itself.
It was caused by sediment carried down to the delta of the Mississippi River until the weight of the deposit broke the back of the valley, so to speak, and that condition will recur from time to time as long as water flows. It is difficult to realize how much sediment the Mississippi River carries to its delta. It is approximately 400 feet below St. Louis and 300 feet below the sunken lands. Whenever the weight becomes too great, the backbone of the valley snaps and at the weak point. When this happens, the crust of the earth rises in some places, slips down in others, grinds, wrenches, turns topsy-turvy. How long the intervals are between breaks, we have no means of knowing.
The Earthquake, from the Baptist Missionary Magazine, March 1812.
Still was the hour. The moon drove high, her cloudless course along the sky. The winds were hushed, no zephyr's sigh breathed o'er the deep tranquility. What awful stillness reigns around! Nature seems sunk in sleep profound.
What sudden trembling moves the ground? What shakes the earth so fearfully? Earth's bosom seems with pain to swell. What wandering spirit strikes that bell? Nature, is thy funeral knell?
My soul, is this eternity? How dread the earthquake's awful roll that shakes the earth from pole to pole. What power can thus convulse the whole? Can it be less than deity?